Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. America's public school system has served us well. It educated many of today's leaders here and around the country. But increasingly, public schools have been asked to do a lot more than just educate. A lot more. At the same time, funding hasn't kept up with needs. It is more than anecdotal that many teachers find themselves spending their own money on classroom supplies. It's also no secret that those same teachers have seen wages not keep pace with economic realities, and respect for teachers, which used to be sacrosanct, has diminished, along with faith and confidence in our public schools. There are those who believe the answer is opportunity scholarships, essentially backpack funding, where parents get state money to send their children to the schools of their choice. We've also seen a rise in the number of charter schools. All that money comes at the expense of public schools that are already strained. This is happening because, to be frank, some public schools are struggling to get students to read, write, and do math at grade level, and observers have questioned the success of efforts to remedy that deficiency. With that as background, who would want to be the next North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction? One answer is Mo Green. He is running as the Democratic candidate for that office in a wide-open race. The GOP incumbent, Kathy Truitt, was defeated in the primary by Michelle Morrow. Mr. Green brings experience as the superintendent of Guilford County Schools and ultimately deputy superintendent at CMS. Ms. Morrow homeschools her children and has called the public schools indoctrination centers. That means politics has entered this race in a big way, and we'll talk about that as well as Mo Green's vision for what public education in North Carolina could and should be. And Mo Green is here. Welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
We invited Mr. Green's opponent, Michelle Morrow, to be with us on a later program, and we'll let you know when we have that date nailed down. I'm going to start by asking you a question I ask anybody running for political office, and that is, why do you want this job?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. So I want this job because I believe in our public schools and believe that they can be and have been and will be transformative vehicles for so many of our students, and then in turn, their families, communities, et cetera. This job, I believe, is one that can help with public schools being the great entities that they are. So I also believe that I have a level of experience necessary to effectively lead the Department of Public Instruction and oversee the education of our public schools in North Carolina.
Why do you believe in public education in 2024 when so many other people have lost or are losing confidence?
Because I've seen it work. I've seen it work for so many students in so many different ways. As you mentioned, I was in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools as the attorney, and then also as chief operating officer and deputy superintendent, and then as superintendent of Guilford County Schools. I was able to see firsthand the great work that our public educators do day in and day out. I've seen the results. Especially when you put a charge in front of the educators, the community, the parents, the students, to suggest to them that they ought to be striving for excellence, students respond in kind. And so I've seen, you know, rising graduation rates. At the same time that we saw those rising graduation rates, for example, in Guilford County schools going from the high 70s to almost 90%, we also had increases in the number of students that were taking and passing college level courses while still in high school, taking and passing courses like advanced placement courses and the exams and international baccalaureate courses and exams. You know, seeing those increases, seeing the number of kids who were taking and passing career and technical education experiences. You know, so I've seen so many things happen well with our students that I know that it can be transformative for them and so many others.
You've seen it firsthand. A lot of people don't have that opportunity, even if they have children in the public schools. They only go to parent-teacher meetings, perhaps, or a PTA meeting here and there, or maybe they don't go to them at all, and they just see what's happening in general. Where do you think, if you're so sold on public education, where do you think the impression that the schools should be replaced by charter schools or opportunity scholarships to allow parents to take their children to private schools? Where do you think that is coming from?
Well, it's probably coming from a lot of different sources. So there are those who I believe don't believe in public education as a fundamental matter. Don't believe that we should be spending dollars.
Hold on. Why don't they believe in it?
Well, so I can only articulate what I've heard. You know, I can't suggest that I believe this, but what I've heard is that those dollars would be best spent elsewhere, that all children some people don't believe all children need to be educated to a certain level for an effective economy and society. Again, these aren't things that I believe in. I want to be 110% clear on that when I say these things. I also believe that some folk actually believe that there must be improvement in student outcomes. And I certainly believe in that as well. So I don't want to suggest to you that everything is completely rosy with regards to public education. There are situations where we must do better with regards to our students. However, the way to get there, I don't believe, is necessarily to say, well, let's turn to other educational opportunities like private schools or other things, particularly when we find ourselves in a place where we are woefully underfunding our public schools.
Did you get a public school education growing up?
So I got a combination of both public and private. So when I started education actually in New York, I went to a private school. And then when my family moved to Georgia, I was 9 years old. We then, my brother and I then entered into public schools and finished from fifth grade for me through high school.
And I want to point out that you have a law degree from Duke University. So that public education got you there. Would that be accurate?
Yes, sir. I certainly believe that it was both the combination of what I got in the private school and what I also received in the public school that got me to both Duke undergrad and Duke School of Law.
You have experience both at CMS here at various different levels and various different job positions at CMS, and later on as for I think 7 years or so as the superintendent at Guilford County Schools. Nationally, we are told repeatedly that CMS has an excellent reputation. Locally, not so much, unless you like the school that your child particularly is going to and the teacher that your child has. We tend to look at it with a slanted eye somewhat. Our North Carolina schools, is CMS, clearly you think Guilford County is because you ran it for a while, are they serving students well, or are the public schools failing us in some way?
So I believe that our public schools are serving our students well as a whole. When I think about, for example, Guilford County Schools, just this past year, so this is after I served as superintendent, but just this past year, U.S. News and World Report identified the number one elementary school, the number one middle school, the number one high school in the state of North Carolina, and the number one high school in this entire country. So four different opportunities. They identified the number one elementary school to be a Guilford County school, the number one middle school to be a Guilford County school, the number two high school to be a Guilford County school, the number one high school to be a Guilford County school in the entire state, and the number one high school in the entire country was identified as a Guilford County school. I could go on with other metrics and information about where I think our schools are performing exceptionally well And I don't want to suggest that everything, again, is perfect, that there isn't a need for us to continue to focus on improving student outcomes for all students in all situations. That's true for every school anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I don't want us to sort of suggest that public schools somehow or another are doing worse, if you will, than other schools. We all have a need to improve outcomes for all students. And so public schools, I think, fall in that same vein. And so for me, then, the question is, how does one go about using the resources that we have, the resources that ought to be provided to public school, so that we can have the kind of outcomes we know we want for all students?
For people who don't know, Guilford County is home to Greensboro. Those are the schools that the Greensboro young people go to. And you just mentioned these four schools that were named by U.S. News and World Report as being the best in the country. In the 7 years that you spent as superintendent of that district, you saw what has been described as massive improvements, and you've already alluded to this, to the graduation rate. In just 7 years, graduation rates went from 79.7% to 89.3%, and nine schools posted perfect 100% graduation rates, with 10 others posting graduation rates of 90%. To what do you attribute all of this?
So I attribute it to a number of things. And I'll just lay them out, not in any particular order. But I need to be sure that we recognize all of our educators. And that, when I say that, I'm meaning more than just our teachers. I'm talking about all of the folks who contribute to the educational outcomes for our students. So our cafeteria workers, custodians, our bus drivers, the list is long. I want to recognize our community. I want to recognize our parents, and then also the students themselves. And so what I believe all that happened, so there are a lot of things going well before I even arrived. But what I think really began to take shape was our community, students, parents, educators, leaned in on this vision that we set forth for the district, which was, to utilize a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education, and combined it with a focus on excellence. The thing that I really tried to suggest to everybody is our children will rise to the levels that we set for them. And so if we set for them a focus on being the absolute best, being excellent in all that they do, they will come along. And that's certainly was true in so many instances. Mike, if I might just share one example that I think drills in on this, and I want to recognize, the leader of this school, Eric Hines, but it was school, North Carolina A&T State University, the middle college there. This is a school that had end of course composite score that was in the 40s. Went to the 90s, had 100% graduation rate, and had 100% of the students who would be accepted to a college and university. And they did this year after year after year while I was there. And this is a school that was primarily, was 100% male and 100% African-American.
We have to take a break. Mo Green is our guest. He is the Democratic candidate to be the North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction. We're coming right back in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Mo Green. He is the Democratic candidate to be the North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction. His opponent, Michelle Morrow, the Republican, has agreed to be on this program. We have not yet set a date for that. We'll let you know when we do. We mentioned when you were the superintendent of public instruction or public of the schools of Guilford County Schools that you presided over increased and more successful graduation rates. I won't go back into the numbers, but I have to ask this. Were those students who were graduating at grade level, did they have the skills needed for college and or for the workforce, or were they being pushed through to increase graduation rates?
Great, thank you. And Mike, before I answer that question, I just wanted to wrap up on something we were discussing just before the break. And that was the one school that I was lifting up. And the fact that that school was almost 100% African-American. And the reason I wanted to lift that up is because across this country, most people, when they think about African-American males, suggest that those students will not be able to be successful in high school and thereafter. And so to have a school that would have 100% graduation rates, would have end of course composites in the 90s, would be accepted to a college or university year after year after year, suggest that maybe when you set the bar where it should be set, our students will rise to it. Now to get to your question. Certainly, I believe that our students were prepared for whatever was next for them when they graduated from high school. Now, there were certainly some of those students who were not revealing on particular examinations that they may be ready for whatever that next might be. And so that is, again, a place where I think we as public school educators, folks who work in the public education system, must continue to work to be sure that they also reveal on those examinations that they're fully prepared for the next as well. But no, we did not. We did not try to just simply push people along so that our graduation rates would go up. In fact, I was very adamant about the following. As our graduation rates go up, we need to also then see increases in other things, like, for example, the number of students who are taking and passing college-level courses or advanced placement exams, international baccalaureate exams, because to me, those things would show that our kids were ready for the next, if it was college, that they were looking to pursue. And those numbers absolutely also went up as well.
The job you are seeking is currently occupied by the Republican incumbent who was defeated in the primary, Catherine Truitt. She was on this program maybe a year or so ago. And her views, as I recall them, kind of align with some Republican lawmakers, not all, but some. She challenged them on some things, like granting calendar flexibility to school districts and lobbying to improve letter grades that are given not to students, but to the schools. And she pushed how students are taught to read. And she pushed to revamp how the state recruits and pays teachers. How would you assess her performance? Because I assume that you had planned on running against her.
So, certainly I'll say two things. It feels like there were two different questions in there. The assumption that I thought I would be running against her, I certainly thought that, as the incumbent, that she would ultimately be successful, even where I was hearing some thoughts that maybe she was having a more difficult primary. Thought that she would be ultimately elected by the Republican Party. So then when you get to the assessment of how she was doing, I think that in some ways she was doing well. For example, I am fully on board with what she was doing with regards to, and she and the state board was doing with regards to early literacy. Using the science of reading. In fact, I served on a six-state cohort along with her. Six states were working on how to best implement the science of reading in our public schools. And North Carolina was one of the six states, and I was one of the individuals on that implementation team. Certainly, issues around trying to revamp The accountability model was certainly something that I was interested in as well. We may not have done it exactly the same way. In fact, some of the implementation of the science and reading I may have done differently as well. Yeah, there are other things where, you know, I would suggest that perhaps I would do some things differently. For example, the significant effort that folks are putting into developing a pay structure for teachers. I certainly don't want to criticize all of that work and the mindset that they were utilizing to try to increase compensation for teachers. But I started in a different place. For me, I believe that we must increase the base compensation for teachers before we get to anything beyond. We are in this state, at or right at the bottom in the entire country with what we pay our teachers, particularly our beginning teachers. And so before you get into all these things, incentives and ways to increase, you know, compensation, I believe we've got to raise the level of compensation, base pay, period. So there are things that I think we would have had very good conversations about as we went about trying to suggest to others who was best, the best person to lead the state through this position.
So what do you see as the primary challenge facing public education and public educators in North Carolina, and where would you put your focus?
Yeah. So there are, you know, first of all, this position, I think, has two major purposes. And I think it's important for folks to understand that. The first one is administration. The other one is advocacy. So administration, you know, overseeing public schools, along with the State Board of Education, administering $11 billion annually. You know, those sorts of things are on the administrative side. On the advocacy side, you know, you're really trying to be sure that people understand the issues, and then, you know, trying to be sure that people are aware of challenges and ways to improve. And for me, so much of what's needed in this moment is on the advocacy side. The number one issue facing our public schools right now is funding. We in this state, when compared to the rest of the nation, are at or near the bottom with regards to funding of our public schools. So when you think about that, we are 48th with regards to public school funding. And you say, well, let's compare sort of effort. So there was a report that came out in 2022, how much effort does each state put into their public schools? North Carolina in 2022 was in last place, 50th, not a state below us. This year, 2023, the report came out that said we're in 49th. So we are essentially at the bottom. Secondly, it is connected to that is the reverence that I believe we must pay towards our educators. Yeah, so you mentioned it in your opening comments. And so I just want to lift up some of what you were trying to articulate. And that is we are in a world where we are belittling our educators. It needs to be exactly the opposite of that. We need to be not only respecting, but revering our educators. This is a noble profession. And so we must revere them. And part of that then is what I've discussed earlier, paying them substantially. Those would be the two top things I would be lifting up that is critically important if we're gonna do some of the other things that are necessary for us to do in improving our educational system and driving it to a place of excellence.
Revering educators is one of your six pillars that we'll talk about in a second here in terms of where you think the emphasis should be placed. But some see the lack of this state's response to the court order to more fully fund education that came down, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago in the Leandro case, which is still... still fail to accomplish anything. They see that. They see this massive distribution of opportunity scholarships as additional evidence that political leaders either don't believe in the public schools or they want those schools to fail. What do you think of opportunity scholarships?
I'm opposed to opportunity scholarships, particularly now that they've been expanded such that anyone could take advantage of the scholarship. And by that, I'm suggesting that anyone being those who can already afford to send their child to a private school, that they now can get it, take advantage of a scholarship and get government assistance, if you will. Yeah, so you're talking about those who, again, across the board, this is even those who, have already put their child in a private school. And so for me, when you start to think about it, I'm one of those who believes in school choice. If you look at Guilford County Schools, you will see that we try to provide tremendous choices for our children. Having said that, when someone chooses to send their child to a private school, they've made their wonderful choice, and they should do that with their own dollars. This is so particularly important. This comes at a time where, as you already mentioned, Leandro has suggested that there are billions of dollars due into our public schools that are not coming into it. And so to take money and take what ultimately would be $500 million and have them go to private schools annually, that is a significant problem.
So it's not just opportunity scholarships. It's the fact that for the last several years, many years, there has been this push to open more and more charter schools. And charter schools are funded with money that comes from the public schools. So between that and opportunity scholarships taking money from what could be a pot of money that could have gone to public schools, and the not following the court order to more fully fund the public school system as prescribed by the courts in the Leandro case, is that why some public schools are underperforming? Simply because they have been starved for the money they need to operate adequately.
I certainly believe that that is a significant reason why what I'm going to call traditional public schools, some of them are not performing as well. Now, I want to back up and be sure that folks understand sort of where I stand with regards to charter schools. When charter schools first started in North Carolina, there was a cap placed on them of 100. And the idea was so that these would be opportunities for innovation. And so I was one of those who said, well, let's see what they come up with. This would be really a neat way of exploring innovative practices, and then maybe there are some things that the traditional public schools then could take advantage of, learn from innovative practices. Indeed, when I was superintendent of Guilford County Schools, we looked to a charter school and a private school to establish a middle school preparatory. And so I believe there is a place for charter schools. The challenge
you're not alone in that, because almost every single superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg schools that I've talked to in the last 25 years has said the charter schools are a good thing. They provide competition for the public schools. Maybe there's something that they're doing that's successful that we could adopt. And yet the truth is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, that they are they're playing on a different playing field. It's not even unlevel. It's a different field. They don't have to report to it quite as stringently. They don't have to take everybody. They don't have to provide transportation. They don't have to provide school lunches. They're on a different playing field. And a lot of times, some of the things that they're doing that might in fact be working, public schools can't adopt because there are regulations that prevent that from happening.
Yeah, and so as I was saying, there are challenges then with the charter school model that was established when it was 100. Things like you've lifted up, things like not having to provide, for example, free and reduced lunch meals or transportation that can lead to segregated opportunities for the charter schools. And then for me, where I became increasingly concerned with charter schools is when we decided in this state to remove the cap completely, allowing in, you know, now many, many more charter schools, many more for-profit, you know, backed by for-profit organizations to run these charter schools in ways that haven't. And then the experiment itself, while there's certainly some very good charter schools, there has been analysis done to suggest when you compare the traditional public schools to the charter schools, the traditional public schools are actually outperforming the charter schools. So the experiment, which I was in favor of saying, let's try it, hasn't produced the kind of results that suggest to me that we ought to be doing this massive expansion of charter schools.
And yet,
particularly with those dollars that now are being drained from the traditional public.
And yet between the expansion of charter schools and the now expansion of opportunity scholarships to anybody who wants them, although the demand has outstripped the supply at the moment, you would be, should you win this office, a Democrat as the North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction, working with a legislature that will most likely remain Republican-controlled. Can you work with them? Can you get things done under those circumstances, or would you be working at cross purposes with what they intend?
Yeah, so I recognize that certainly if things go the way that you suggest that they will, and I'm not going to agree that they necessarily will be the way you suggest, but if they do go that way, then I have to only look at my track record where I have worked across the aisle, if you will, worked with both Republicans and Democrats and unaffiliated board members to achieve, I believe, great results for young people. Part of what I do, I did it when I was superintendent of Guilford County Schools, did it when I was the executive director for the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation, is I like to listen, learn, and then lead. And so I'll listen to what the folks are trying to bring up, where they're trying to go, and then figure out ways for us to move forward together in ways that will benefit our children.
Mo Green is our guest. He's the Democratic candidate to be North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction. When we come back, we're going to talk about your statement that you think this is the election about is about the very soul of public education and more. Stay with us at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Mo Green. He's the Democratic candidate for North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction, who says that this election is about the very soul of public education. What does that mean?
So I believe that you've quoted me correctly, that this is about the very soul of public education, that it is on the ballot this November. And what I mean by that is I believe we're witnessing the dismantling of public education. I like to say brick by precious brick. We've hit on a few of those things already, things like funding, effort towards public school funding, the pay for teachers, the reverence that I think is lacking with regards to educators, the expansion of the private school voucher program. The list is long. It goes beyond that now, where I suggest that now we are finding ourselves at a place where we're having conversations about schools being considered indoctrination and socialist center, and really trying to suggest that our public schools are not appropriate, welcoming places for our students. And so that's where I think we have moved from not only dismantling to now, if we're not careful, we've got someone who would suggest the abolishment of the State Board of Education. And so we are at a place where we must understand that actually the very soul of public education is on the ballot.
Well, let's talk about that. Michelle Morrow is your Republican opponent. She beat the Republican incumbent, Kathy Truitt, in the primary. She homeschools her children. This is just an opinion, but let me ask you your opinion on this. Should someone who homeschools their children be in charge of public education?
Yeah, so the voters can decide who should be in charge of public education. And I don't want to suggest that simply because someone homeschools their students, they don't have the requisite experience, knowledge, beliefs in our public schools to run our public school system. The challenge is, in this particular instance, you've got someone who has indicated is a homeschooler, and I have nothing against homeschoolers, but also then has suggested in many ways, as clearly as I think one can, that has deep, deep concerns about our schools. When you call them indoctrination centers, socialist centers, then that is, to me, the issue that makes me wonder whether that's the kind of person that should be in charge of it.
I want to point out that we have invited Michelle Morrow to be on this program at a later date. She has agreed. We're working out a time when that mutually works for us and for her. She has said that students in the state's public schools are having their minds poisoned with, quote, politically biased, racially divisive, sexually explicit, and academically weak content. What's your take on that?
I think that, so much of that is just not true. It's a false narrative. And for those in our public school to have to try to defend against that kind of language, I think is so unfortunate. Certainly there are educators. All educators understand the diverse students that we have and that we work with on a daily basis, and the need to try to be sure that we're providing them with the requisite and differentiated resources that they need to be successful. But the language that you just quoted me, I believe, is a false narrative.
She believes that public education, as you've said, is socialist, and she calls teachers groomers. And she made these statements about what's happening in our public schools. I could quote her, but I think it's more important to let her say it for herself. So take a listen.
We know for a fact that the schools have been using their platform to push a godless agenda, to push the lie that the United States and all wealthy white people are the enemy, that capitalism is evil and free market is evil, that we as the United States have wreaked havoc across the world and we need to pay the price for it, that, you know, that if your parents believe in God and the Bible, you guys are foolish because that's all just a bunch of stories. We know that they're teaching them that there's more than two genders, which goes completely against scriptural teaching.
Some of this is a focus of white nationalism, but what role does religion have, do you think? What role does scriptural teaching have in public education?
So our courts have long said that there should be a division between religion and what's taught in our schools. And so, educators have tried to honor that. That does not mean that educators don't believe. So many of them actually do believe in Christianity and in other religions as well. But the challenge is then, how does one work with students who come from very diverse backgrounds, receive the kind of educational opportunities that they should? And so part of the way that I believe one does that is to focus on some of the underlying ethos of, a lot of religious practices. And that is on, the kind of character that students should have. And so that's where you hear me say very clearly that I believe that it's important for us to focus on not only intelligence, but character development for each of our students.
She says she knows for a fact, those are her words, that schools are telling children that, quote, the United States and all wealthy white people are the enemy. We just heard her say that. Is that being taught in any classroom that you know of in North Carolina, or is this an offshoot of the debunked lie that critical race theory is being taught, which it is not?
Yeah, to my knowledge, and you know, as best as I know, as I've made my way around this state, listening to educators across this state, what is being shared is not being taught in our schools. And so, again, I believe this is a false narrative. It is, but what it is, Mike, is it is an attempt. It's in line with what I was saying before, that we are trying, there are folks who are trying to dismantle our public school system. And so rather than focusing on the things that we need to be focusing on, we're going to spend our time focusing on these kind of false narratives. And it
let me ask you this, though, because you said it several times that there are people who are actively working to dismantle our public school system. Why?
Again, I can only articulate as I did earlier, Mike, what others say, the reasons that they're doing it. I don't believe it. So I hate to be the one that's trying to transcribe or suggest these things as the reasons why. I wish you will. You ought to reach out to them and have that conversation
with them. And I will with her. She says that the schools are teaching that capitalism is evil, that free market is evil, that the U.S. has wreaked havoc across the world. Now, we are not a perfect nation. Because we're a human nation. We're made up of human beings, and no human beings are perfect. And it is true that in hindsight, some of the things that we have engaged in over the years have been questionable at best. The invasion of Iraq following 9/11, we went into the wrong country, no question about it. But how should our blemishes be taught? Because this is a major concern of a lot of people. We're not perfect. So how do we teach about enslaving people for 400 years? How do we teach about some of the activities that the country has been engaged in that were not perfect? We made mistakes. Should they be ignored? Should they be discussed? How do we do it?
So they absolutely ought to be shared with our students in an age-appropriate manner. And with educators who are fully equipped to engage in the kind of presentation and discussion of these issues. I believe that it actually will make us appreciate our country more when we understand some of the things that we have done that have not been appropriate for all of the folks who live in this country and across this world. That doesn't mean to me that we should shy away from saying, gosh, our country should never have enslaved individuals. And what is the result of having done that? How does that then impact us in our society today? Because when you have that kind of conversation, I believe you then allow the next generation to say, okay, how can then we do better? How we don't repeat the very mistakes that maybe our ancestors made in this country. And so I think it's very important for us to teach some challenging issues, to teach them accurately. I think it's also important that we do them in age-appropriate manners as well going forward.
Your opponent, Michelle Morrow, claims that the schools and the Democratic Party, and you're a Democrat, have socialist aims. In fact, she calls the Democratic Party the Democrat Socialist Party. And she goes on.
The Democratic platform is of the devil. Every part of it is of the devil. And we have got to fight against that.
Okay, you're the Democratic candidate for North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction. What do you say to that? What do you say to counter that message to those who believe it?
Yeah, first of all, Mike, I very much appreciate that you just let her words speak for themselves. You know, so that this then is the type of person that we want to be over our children. Let's just sit with that for a moment. That they would call folks devils. That she, I don't know if you'll do the quote, but she calls for the public execution of the President of the United States.
There are no words to that.
Other
no
than
words
other,
to that.
there are no words other than, Mike, this is how serious this is. Because this is bigger than Mo Green at this point. We must not have this kind of person over our children. This is so important that we understand the moment that those who are champions of public education and know that public education is not a socialist endeavor, that this is not about the devil. This is about the effective education of our tomorrows. And so I don't even have to add words to sort of say anything other than about what she said, other than I hope people will understand and will agree that regardless of their political agenda, affiliation, be it conservative or Republican or unaffiliated, lean one way or the other, that when it comes to the education of our children, we should not have this type of person over our children.
We have about 3 minutes left, and you have six pillars that I want you to talk about. They are invest in public education, prepare students for the next phase of life, revere public school educators, enhance parent and community support, ensure safe, secure learning environments, and celebrate the good in public education. Let's start with the last one. What do you mean by celebrate the good? Many people see very little good in it. What do you see?
I see so much. I see so many amazing things happening in our public schools. We've had the opportunity to explore, for example, just a few of those in Guilford County schools. Again, lifting the Guilford County schools up, but I could do this with so many school districts across the state. Being a national district of character, being recognized for all of the great work done in the arts in a school district. I want to lift up here one thing to be clear about, because I have actually been an attorney, represented Fortune 500 companies, small businesses. You don't start off with, we're terrible. That's the way everyone else wants to start off with. There are so many wonderful things that we've got to be sure that folks celebrate the good while also working on improving our outcomes.
So one of the pillars and one of the things that you've talked about is revering public school educators. Where does that start? Does it start by giving teachers more autonomy in the classroom, by allowing them not to have to teach strictly to the test and maybe adjust the curriculum as they see fit as professionals in the classroom dealing with students who have different needs? Does it start with your first pillar, investing in public education and raising salaries? Where do you start?
Well, first it starts with a mindset, an absolute mindset that folks who go into public education to become educators must be celebrated and revered. It includes some of the very things that you've lifted up, certainly increased compensation, increased autonomy where appropriate, recognizing that there are some standards that we want our educators to be sure that they're meeting with our students, but how they sort of go about that, being sure that we allow them the opportunity to figure out what's the best way to work with our students, recognizing that they are intelligent individuals doing the very best that they can for our students. The list is long on what revere means, but it starts, Mike, with a mindset shift. Where you're on one hand, I'm having to discuss folks who are talking about belittling our educators. I need us to get to the other extreme.
Mo Green is running to be the North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction. He is the Democratic candidate. His Republican challenger, Michelle Morrow, has been invited to be on this program to share her positions on public education as she runs for that same position. And we are working on it. She has agreed in principle to do it. We're working on a date. We'll let you know when that happens. Mo Green, we thank you for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.